All right. Is this thing on?
No?
Okay, good. How's everybody doing? Boy, how's everybody doing? Come on. Okay, some people are awake out there. That's good. Man, it's summer in Vancouver. Isn't that something? Wow. I look outside. Holy smokes. It's summer. It's hot. It's just so beautiful. I grew up in Edmonton, and I'll tell you, man, I can remember cutting the grass, and out comes that flood of mosquitoes. They sit down there in the grass. You know what I'm saying? Some of you are laughing, yeah? You know what Alberta's all about. So it's great to be here, and I had the chance to speak to you just a short year ago. Do you remember that? And that was on the supremacy of love, and here I am again, a quick year later. They're going fast, aren't they? We were up in Kelowna here this last weekend, and we're driving up just past Merritt, and traffic slows down, and we come up, and here's a poor guy in his one-ton dually, and his camper had come loose, and that camper came up in the air, and it sat down on its bum, crash, right on the freeway. Wasn't that fun? I think he ended up going home that weekend. And we saw a three-car pile up, too, and of course, one of them was a Tesla. Ew. So you know what it's like in Vancouver. People can really get the moving on. Thanks to the people, by the way, who make this coffee. Raise your hands. Who made the coffee this morning? There's one there. Another? Oh, come on. Come on, you guys. It's nice to have a coffee in the morning, I got to say. And you know, I'm a bit of a tinker at home. I make these little boxes. I call it a prayer box. You can write your request there, whatever that may be, and you can put that in the box and then believe God for what you're asking. And God is not a genie. We know that, right? You don't rub the box and he comes out and gives you three wishes. No, it's not like that. But you can make your request known to him and throw that in the box and believe God for it. And then, what will he give you? His peace. So, I have two of these, and I'm sure Warren or Ron or somebody could do a much better job of these, but there's two, and you can have one if you like. You can come up after, and if there's more one of you, then you can do birthdays or draw straws or something, but that's for you, and if it brings you a little closer to God, then I think I probably did my job. So just thinking about Psalm 23, I did some studying over the past few months. I wish Pastor Rick would have given me maybe 4 days to prepare, not 2 months to worry about it. But as I went through my process of reading and thinking about it, I always like to use a certain Bible. Last year, I used my old granddad's Bible, the old Schofield Reference Bible, big enough to clobber somebody with, you know. But this was my first Bible, and I got this. It says, from your loving parents, 1971. Yeah, that gray hair on top is really gray. I don't color it gray. But I like to use a Bible. I don't know where your first Bible is. Maybe it's up in the attic in a box somewhere. If it is, drag it out of there and put it by your bed and make it special. So I do love God's word. Another thing that I love is box baking and my Bible or two, as I love this cross right here. And you know, I don't think that the real cross back then was quite that neat and tidy. It's all cut and sanded and perfect, you know what I mean? It's an instrument of torture, as we know. What a thing to have at the front of our room here. And so I think every Sunday I come here and I look at that thing and I think, wow, he died on that thing for me. And it was not the nails that held him up there. He could have popped those nails out. Like the old song says, he could have called 10,000 angels to destroy the world and set him free, but he didn't. It was love that kept him pinned up there, not the nails. And I do love Grace Point too. This is such a great little church. It's growing, and people are finding us online. It's amazing. And you know, I go to the coffee thing, and 9 times out of 10, I meet somebody I've never met. And how awesome is that? So I do love Grace Point. There's a lot of great things happening here. So Psalm 23 has been spoken over weddings and funerals and bar mitzvahs, or maybe not bar mitzvahs, I don't know. But it's been spoken over countless generations, probably over, say, 3,000 years or so. It's probably the most famous piece of scripture out there. And I'd like us to read it together. So if we can put that on the screen there, why don't we read this together? Who memorized this as a kid? Put those hands up. Don't be shy. I would say about a third of us, eh? About a third of us, yeah. So it's a great thing to memorize and words of tremendous comfort. Let's read it together, shall we? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. So, Israel has been called the land of milk and honey. You ever heard that before? And the reason for that is because up in the northern regions there, that's where all the vegetables are grown and all the wine and the grapes and all that stuff. So that's kind of the honey part. And then the southern end of the country is milk or dairy. So goats and cattle and all those creatures. And I don't think that we sometimes realize that this shepherd metaphor that is so old and has been out there for so long, it's even used in outside biblical sources. Kings of old in ancient days were often referred to as shepherds. And this sometimes can be called the Bedouin psalm. And if you think back to grade 7, you studied Bedouins and they lived in, that's right, tents. And they were nomadic and they could pull up their tent and they could skedaddle and get over there and find better pastures or better game. And David, for a lot of his life, was a Bedouin as well. And I'll tell you, if you had your flock of sheep, you had to know where those tufts of grass were and where there might be a pool of water. The shepherd would know where those things are because it's very, very dry. And we think back to Samuel, and he's looking for the new king. So he goes to see Jesse and says, "Hey, Jesse, show me some of your sons." And they line them all up. They're all good-looking guys with jet-black beards. And nope, not that one. How about that one? No, not him. No, no, no. They go through them all. Oh, any more kids? Oh, yeah, we got David, but he's tending the sheep. Bring him in. And we all know what happened. He was the one. And he knew what it meant to be. Let's put that a picture of the Negev. Thank you very much. Look at that. Goodness sakes. It's pretty dry, man. And you can see there's a little bit of a what used to be a river valley there. And I have a brother who has been a pastor all his life, and he takes trips every year to Israel. And he's been here many times. And he says, "Lindy," he says, "you wouldn't believe it. There's nothing there. And if you're the shepherd and you got a flock, you better know where everything is, with the water and the grass." And so the reality is, if you left the shepherd, you die. If you left the shepherd, it's over for you. And last year, I mentioned to you about the shepherd. If he's away from the main fold, he'll make a temporary shelter against a rock face or something, and he'll leave the door. And who's the door? The shepherd, of course. So what a great metaphor. So here's my first thought for you today, and that is to declare it. And to be able to declare that he is my shepherd today is a countercultural thing, is it not? Wow. We live in a world of shifting sand. You can declare whatever you want today, and it seems to hit the press and challenge the way we live. We can declare all kinds of things. And you know, when I swing my legs out of bed in the morning, I have to declare that day, every day, that he is my shepherd. that his mercies are new every morning. And David does that here with verse 1, which Pastor Rick asked me just to focus on verse 1. There's 1,000 sermons in verse 1. But he is my shepherd. What a today word that is. He is my shepherd. Not will be or might be or could be, but he is today. He is my shepherd. He's mine. I think of that old song, I am his and he is mine. He's my shepherd. And you know, I recognize that I really can't lead myself. And you don't want to know something? I've tried more than once. And how does that end up? Without the shepherd, I know I will die. And I sense my own need for the shepherd. And, you know, I sometimes look around and I see people following the shepherd of money. Oh, yeah, I got lots of cash. I'm loaded. We'll buy a second house, a third house, more cars, more this, more that. Or their investments, or their talent, or their incredible good looks. Right? That's not the shepherd to follow. He is my shepherd. I got a little story to share with you. Personal story. And, oh, I can just hear all my three boys go, oh, no, Dad, not another story. Oh, indulge me. 2 minutes. 1973. A lot of you weren't even born in 1973. I was in grade school and junior high, and I was in the band program playing trumpet, and I loved it. It was awesome. And we had a band teacher. His name was Mr. Brown, older fella. And he was much loved by the whole crew. And one day we heard he got fired. What? And so our little student union group got together and said, we're going to protest this. We're good red-blooded Canadian kids. We're allowed to protest what we want. So we're going to protest the firing of Mr. Brown. And we're going to walk out of the school. 200 and plus kids. So the day came on the intercom. Everybody go. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll go too. So we went. And I remember standing on the other side of the school on the sidewalk. And out marches Mr. Johnson, the principal. And he was a swarthy, dark-looking fella with big Fu Manchu, mutton chop, whatever you call those things, and he had jet black hair. And I feared him. And I was about to find out I was going to fear him some more. And he came with a megaphone. He says, you kids get back in the school, and if you're not, you're all suspended. Well, I was suspended with 200-plus other kids. So I found myself sitting in the principal's office with my mom, who I had not told anything about this. So you can imagine I got suspended at home too, several times. And he pointed his big hairy finger over his big oak desk at me. And he said, Lyndon, he says, you're a sheep. You followed everybody. You don't even know what's going on with Mr. Brown. Don't be a sheep in your life. Next. I left that room with my tail between my legs, and here it is 150 years later, and I still think about that. Yes, I am a sheep. Wow. It's been a long time, and I still do think about that, and I recognize that I cannot lead myself. I'm just not able. God has to do it. I have a great quote from an old book here that my son Devin gave me called Introducing Jesus. It's a zinger. Let's read it. Christianity is not the intellectual acceptance of a set of theological propositions that you've managed to convince yourself of. Christianity is a response of personal trust directed towards Jesus himself. Wow. Christianity is about a personal relationship with a person. Not some God who lives out, you know, hitherto and yonder. It's a personal relationship with God himself. Jesus says in John 10, I am the good shepherd. I followed a bad shepherd that day called the student union. I didn't really know what was going on. But Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. So what if we decide, no, I'm not going to declare that. You know, my life's going good. I've got a good job. I've got a couple cars and this and that. I don't really need to, you know, whatever. If you don't declare it, then it's all on you. It's self. It's intensely self. And that's a dangerous road, an empty road. And I love David's thought process. In Psalm 139, he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Oh, wow. What a characteristic of a God-focused life. And I also think about Joshua, just at the end of the chapter, he's about to die, and he challenges the children of Israel, and he puts a big rock there. He says, "This is a testament to you. If you don't follow the Lord, the rocks will cry out against you." Yikes. And he said, "Choose you this day whom you will serve," he says to them. "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord," he says. He declares it. David declares it, and we must also declare it. Here's a second thought to you, for you, is to give it all to him. That's maybe easier said than done, right? But, you know, I think of your home, your investments, but more than that, your own future. And, you know, I've realized, you know, being 150 years old now, that I fear the future. I do. I have a fear of the future. I watch the news, which I shouldn't watch. I'm going to stop that right now. And there's a tremendous fear of the future, of what's going to happen, what's going to happen to me. And, you know, I have to say, I heard from the Lord this year. It doesn't happen all that often. And the Lord spoke to me in January, and he didn't, you know, come out of my closet in the middle of the night and drag me out of bed and, you know, give me, you know, it wasn't like that. It was just a very strong impression about what he had to say to me. And he said this, he said, "What is it that you really want? Because I'd like to retire, I'd like a new car, I'd like to move and sell and get some money and all of this stuff that we're all embroiled with, right, in this crazy market." And he says, "What is it that you really want?" And it really floored me. So I've been thinking about that since January. And on our way to Kelowna, once we passed the poor guy's camper sitting on the highway there, I went to a double funeral, my aunt and my uncle, Myrtle and Bob. They both passed away, very close timing to each other. And so they had a funeral for both. And of course, they were pastors in the Evangelical Free Movement, and they were pastors all their lives. Wow, I watched the slideshow. Fantastic pictures of where they served and people they knew. And then, of course, you know, there's 250 of us singing, you know, four or five hymns at the top of our lungs. Wow. I was really impacted by that. And I thought, that's what I want. Is that a legacy of faith in Christ? That second part of that verse, "I shall not want." Oh, wow. Don't talk to me about wanting stuff, okay? I'm not the right guy to be preaching this message, but it changes my perspective. And, you know, I checked the Passion Bible to see what this said in verse 1, and it said, "God is my shepherd, I don't need anything." And I thought, well, that's not really right. It isn't even really a translation. It's more of a paraphrase type thing. And I do have wants and needs. But let's just put up a quick picture of this good-looking young fellow here. You know, sometimes when your wants and needs get mixed up, all you have to do is go on Google, and, you know, he's got enough Ziploc bags there to last about 200 years. And, oh, you know, you can take that down. It's just depressing to look at. You know, when our wants and needs get messed up with the world, things don't go right for us. And we must look at God and make him our shepherd and allow him to meet our needs. And I'm not saying he's going to give you a new Cadillac and he's going to give you a home in Palm Springs, where my wife is today, by the way, at 150 degrees Celsius. But again, God is not a genie, but he is going to meet your deepest need, your deepest. So, I appreciated Kerry speaking last week. He spoke here and gives a good overview of Psalm 23 and other details and a great song at the end and so on. Thank you for that, Kerry, if you're here. And he talked about the garages open on a Saturday afternoon. Have you done that? You drive around your area and people's garages are open and it's bursting. They can't even put their cars in there because they've got so much stuff. That's me too. I've got more than I need. And I've got to get a handle on that one day. Right, Devin? I know my son is a minimalist and he says, Dad, what are we doing with this here? Get rid of this. So God bless him. I'm not the guy to talk about wanting stuff. And my brother-in-law, Greg, and I were laughing the other day about surfing Craigslist. Oh, let's see if there's another car that I can find that I'd love to buy. And he said, we got to stop doing that. Okay, I've stopped doing that, but he's still doing that, looking for more cars. And, you know, it's like a prison because I'm always looking over the hill to the next thing. Okay, let's put up this picture here. There's me in 1977. Okay, that was my first car. And you know, funny enough, that car was a 75. Yeah, it was 1975. And I bought that in 77, and it was in the back lot of the dealership. It was an old junker. And it was 3 years old. Had 49,000 miles on it. It was beautiful. I bought it. But a three-year-old car back then, you throw it out. But today, a three-year-old car is a new car almost, right? Anybody know what that car is? I can't hear you. Old Cutlass, yes, sir. You deserve the prize. Good job. So, you know, that started the ball rolling for me because I'm a car guy. You might be a purse lady or a shoe lady, or you might be a boat guy, God forbid, you know, bring another a boat of cash, you know. But that was my thing. And there's my dad's car ahead of us, and you know, we were so excited to have that car. And that started my journey on getting cars. And I thought, the next one, yeah, that'll really make me happy. And 80 cars later, I can only... Oh, don't do that, please. 80 cars later, I can tell you by experience that things do not make you happy. They just don't. It might give you a thrill for 8 hours or so, and I'm driving the new one around thinking, oh, shoot, I should buy that. It's such an empty thing. And my advice is to give your life to him, to declare that he is your shepherd and allow him to meet your deepest need, which is to be one with him. So the longer that you walk with the shepherd, like my uncle and aunt, the more beautiful life becomes. And the word says to cast your cares on him because he cares for you. Here's my third thought for you, and that is this. And this is a tough one too. I know these are all tough ones. Is to rest in him. To rest in him. David knew how to rest in him. But there were other times, right, where David was screaming, saying, Lord, my enemies are going to devour me. Deliver me. Sure, he had those times too. But he also knew how to rest in God. And what did that look like? He describes it for us. We just read it. Green pastures, a table before me, still waters, an overflowing cup of blessing. And as Spurgeon wrote, the twin angels, goodness and mercy, they follow me all the days of my life. And then at the end, what happens? Ha! I live with him forever. He knew how to rest. And David really understood what it meant to be that shepherd. It was a poor, lowly job, but he knew what it was all about. I met a guy at Tim's 2 weeks ago. I'd never seen the man in my life. And he walked up and he says, you go to that church, Grace Point over there? I said, yeah, I do. And he says, well, I came in the parking lot and I saw women coming in the thing with shorts on. He said, that's not holy. I said, really? What's your name? And I said, you can decide now who's holy and who isn't holy. And he wanted to have a conversation, and I thought, oh boy, God looks on the heart. And he looked at David and knew that David would allow him to be his shepherd and allow him to meet his deepest need. So how do we rest in him, right? We're so busy, we got too much to do, and we don't have any time to do anything. What an oxymoron that is. The pressure to pay the bills. We have relationships with a wife and a husband, with our son and daughter, mom or dad. And we got to manage all those things. Our own health, even. I need to lose 5 pounds real bad, you know, solid 5 pounds. You know, our own health, the strain and stress of work and daily life. How do we rest in him? Hudson Taylor, whom we have a son named after, by the way. He was with the China Inland Mission around the turn of the century, a very godly man, British guy, gave his life to God in China. He even grew the big long ponytail and wore the thing, and he was just a real godly man. He had a plaque that they found after he passed on in his house, and the plaque read this: "He is my Ebenezer, my Jehovah Jireh." Anybody know what Ebenezer means? I didn't think so. Neither did I. It means hitherto has the Lord helped us. Jehovah Jireh, anybody know what that means? The Lord will provide. Did I hear you say that? Ooh, you deserve the prize too. Yes, he is my Ebenezer. Hitherto has the Lord helped us. The Lord will provide. And he knew what it meant to rest in him. And another thought really is that, you know, the shepherd owns the sheep. He owns us. If you belong to him, he owns you. And if you've ever gone to a cattle auction or a sheep auction, they pay a lot of money for a nice animal. And God paid a lot of money for someone like you. Right there. He paid. Listen to this. I've never heard this before, and I'm old. He takes full responsibility for you when you submit to him. He will take full responsibility for you. I don't know if we believe that often, but he does. He will take full responsibility for you to care and feed and nourish, protect and lead. He knows your name. Do I really trust that? And you know, I thought as a sheep, thinking back, standing across that school at Mr. Johnson, who wanted to really have a go at me, which he did. You know, I think back on that and I thought, you know, we're exposed as sheep to constant danger. There's lions out there. They're out there. And I think, you know, I just, as an aside, I did a bit of reading on lions, and David killed lions, right? He knew what it meant to protect the sheep. And I've seen lions in the wild in Africa. And let me tell you want to talk about a formidable beast, 500 pounds of solid muscle and teeth. But back then, in the Negev, which I just showed you, there were lions then. They're extinct now, but they were another 50% larger. So that puts them up to about 680 pounds, close to 700 pounds. That's like a big Harley. And imagine that. That's like four Steves coming at you with his fingers out and his teeth out like that. I'd be running for the hills. Imagine that. And David protected his sheep and was... He understood what that meant. And we're exposed to danger as sheep. We need a protector. Psalm 111, there's so many references through the Psalms. You've got to read through the Psalms if you haven't done that in some time. Psalm 111, the Lord is gracious and compassionate. He has given food to those who fear him. He will remember his promise forever. Wow. And I can say, you know, over my life, that I've had a lot at different times of my life, and I've had a little, like very little, and sort of everything in between. But I can honestly say that God has met my need over my life. And, you know, to be able to say that is really something. But I've known and walked with him for many, many decades, and he's always met my need. Godliness with contentment is great gain. In 1 Timothy, and of course, we come in naked and we leave naked, don't we? We take nothing with us. And so I look to him to meet my deepest need. And so as I kind of wrap up these few practical thoughts based on this first verse, it's a choice to let him shepherd you. It's a choice. And you can say, oh yeah, no, it sounds good. You know, it's something I should maybe do one day. But it really is a choice to allow him to shepherd your life and to submit to him and allow him to meet that deepest need. And you know, God is not a bully. He's not going to crash through your front door and grab you by the hair and drag you down the street and say, oh, we're going this way now. Come on, you're not listening. Let's go. God's not like that. He's gracious. He's kind. And so, as we think about him, he doesn't force himself on us. He allows us to choose. And I quoted this last year as well, and it's Revelation 3:20. We all know it. It's such a famous verse. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. And if any man hear my voice and let me in, I'll come in and eat with him and he with me. Notice. Oh, how polite is that? He knocks. And you can say, yeah, no, I'm not getting that. I'm having pizza. I'll let him go. I'm not going to answer that door. And he knocks and waits for you to say yes. So we choose the shepherd. He is not a bully. And I think of Hudson Taylor once more here. And he said, the real secret of an unsatisfied life lies in the unsurrendered heart. Surrender today. Make that choice to declare that he is my shepherd. Say, yes, he is. And to give it all to him, not give away your house and your stuff, but to mentally give those things and the cares of this life to him, and then rest in him. That's my thoughts for you today. So I have a little song I'll sing for you. It's an old one. I think it was written in the 80s or so. And my sister used to sing this, as I recall. And I always thought it was such a sweet song. So I'll see if I can sing it for you here today. If I can get this thing on here this way. There we go. It's called Willing Heart. Great old tune from the 80s. Once I stumbled in the darkness, doing only as I pleased. But I wasn't really happy, and my heart was not at ease. I just didn't have the willingness to follow his commands, till I laid my life completely in his hands. If you don't have a willing heart, ask him to give you one. If you can't seem to make a start, trust in his power. For the Lord of love is watching you. He knows what you're going through, and he will make a way if you want him to. Oh, do you want him to? Then tell him so. All the things my heart held on to only filled me with despair, and the road that I was traveling never took me anywhere. And I knew no satisfaction till I found my rest in you. And he filled my heart with gladness once again. If you don't have a willing heart, ask him to give you one. If you can't seem to make a start, trust in his power. For the Lord of love is watching you. He knows what you're going through, and he will make a way if you want him to. Oh, do you want him to? Then tell him so. Tell him so. So we choose the shepherd, right? That's how it is. He leaves us the freedom to choose him. So we have every Sunday we have a prayer group here, prayer warriors that are willing to stand with you in faith for that which you are asking. Take advantage of that and come and pray with somebody today. And if you have not made that choice to choose the shepherd, choose him today, give it to him, and rest in him. God bless you. Have a great week. Amen.